You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, hour number two starts right now on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Dell, have a great weekend as we appreciate Dell Olele joining us in hour number one, but Aaron Raybould is now in for the duration as he takes us through four and then joins his show all the way through 7 o'clock with the Blitz as we get you ready for your weekend on an FYF Friday with the suspects. Barry's got our comedian of the week with two more clips to go. Eddie B, he told you a little bit about him in hour number one. So lots of positives and fun things coming up as we finish off the final 2 hours of the show. And Barry, you know me. I'm a staunch Badger supporter. I'm a big Wisconsin guy. Barry Alvarez, the athletic director, I'm a fan of, former coach. I'm not a fan of this. I don't know if you caught this or not, but Wisconsin as a university will not bring back seniors that were to play in spring sports this year so that they can have another year of eligibility next year. Now, while they issued a statement and completely gushed about that these athletes are all Badgers for life and they're there for them, they made the decision because of an unprecedented uncertainty in college athletics that they would not seek waivers for seniors in spring whose final seasons were ended or cut short by the virus and the pandemic. I could not be more upset about this. I could not disagree more with the university. And when you read the statement and they say that the UW Athletics places tremendous emphasis on student athletes earning an undergraduate degree and having a great competitive experience. In the case of these athletes, a substantial percentage of the athletes are scheduled to earn their degree before next spring. In spite of today's uncertainties, we'll do everything possible to support our student athletes to work those towards those degrees. Here's my thing, Barry. Flat out, if you support them like that, if you say what you just said, then guess what? Here's what I do. I give them each the chance, the choice individually. I don't make the choice for them. I say, you know what? You want to come back for another year, regardless of what your graduation rate is, your graduation date scheduled to be, and your class management, where you're at with getting your degree. I'll leave it up to you. But I don't make the decision for them. And in a lot of cases, abruptly ending careers that aren't going any further that the student athlete lived for and enjoyed. It pisses me off.
Yeah, it's not a good look. I'm with you. Anytime you see a move like this, and maybe this is just me, I don't know, but anytime I see a move like this, my first thought is, this must be impacting their bottom line, so they had to make a decision that further increases revenues or whatever for them. That's just my thought. That may not be the case, but it doesn't seem fair because these kids didn't choose this. These kids are the unfortunate fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic in the United States and internationally. And so they're being punished for this. And that seems unfair. It just kind of goes against everything we're about. Like, why are you going to punish these kids? You know,
Alvarez,
your point is great about let them choose. Just let them choose.
Yeah, that's where I would leave it because Alvarez was on the radio and he told WIBA AM that it creates a lot of problems. It's more complicated as far as numbers. You've got another group coming in. You've got a group of freshmen coming in. Do you want this group coming back? How does that affect roster size? There's a financial burden that goes along with that. Okay, look. Again, he also said that the decision would affect about 35 seniors in spring sports, and a lot of them had internships or jobs lined up. Fine. For those players, those athletes that feel like it's time for them to move on and they may lose an internship if they don't take it, whatever the case, okay, I get that. But if you're telling me that you're worried about less than 35 athletes still being a part of a program, and what I really didn't like in the quote was, because you've got a group of freshmen coming in, do you want this group coming back? Well, guess what? You wanted that group that's there for you when they were there for their first 3 years, when they were busting their ass for you, trying to make a name for your university and win games. Now, all of a sudden, because you've got younger guys coming in or younger kids coming in, you suddenly want to just throw them to the wayside and go, yeah, you're on your own now. I hate that.
Yeah, why not just convert those kids coming in to, if you're worried about scholarships, of the 35, let's say 15 of them stay, right? So then, and it's going to be across multiple sports, I'm guessing, not just football, right?
Yep,
right?
It is. Yep. So, no, this isn't even football, Barry. This is track. This is women's softball.
Then you know what you do? You say, okay, we're going to keep the scholarships for the seniors that decided to stay. All these freshmen, you've made the team as a walk-on. You know what I mean? Like, you can still be on the team if you want to. So they can still get in if they wanted to go.
Well, you can redshirt them.
Yeah. That way, yeah, exactly. That too, just redshirt. There's a solution, I think. Now, obviously, if they walk on, they have to pay, so that might not be the ideal thing. But there's a solution out there that they could come up with. They could appease these freshmen coming in and these seniors going out. Let me tell you this, too.
Alvarez is the former head football coach that had a ton of success at Wisconsin, too. You want to tell me that if this was winter sports instead of spring sports, even football, so if this was fall or winter, so say you have, of those 35 players, say you've got two rotational players on your basketball team, or you've got, say, a handful of guys that are impact makers on your football team, offense, defense, even special teams, you know how important that is. You think he's making the same decision?
No way. No way.
I don't either.
There's no way he's just going to let 12 seniors on a football team go. They're way more valuable to that football team than the 12 freshmen coming in.
And even basketball, because you know the two biggest revenue generators in NCAA sports are football and basketball. So because you're not dealing with one of those two issues, right, but because you're dealing with rowing and softball and track and things like that, then he's making his biased decision based on bad financial calculations. Because at the end of the day, when you look at it, I was thinking it was a number, you know, a higher number. But if it's 35 or less, and again, you give the option to a lot of those student athletes that are going to want to get their career started, then great, because there's nothing lost for them. But the fact that they're being punished for something that they didn't do annoys me.
Pretty bad. It sucks. This whole thing, man.
Yeah.
You lose the XFL. These kids are losing their last year of eligibility. I mean, everything goes back to this pandemic and just how awful it's been. And, you know, people have lost their jobs. Companies are folding. And not just in sports, but just in general, man. And it is just devastating right now.
As a flip side, Ohio State's athletic director Gene Smith said Friday, 31 of 70 seniors in spring sports are choosing to return. That equates to 14.28 scholarships, about $630,000 in scholarship costs, and about $900,000 in total expenses. So Ohio State has elected to give those kids the opportunity to come back.
Mm. Yeah.
I hate the right saying thing this, but that's a really bad look for Wisconsin.
It sounds like Ohio State did the right thing.
Which is shocking to me, but I'll go with it.
A lot of those kids one day are going to go up and go play for Tampa Bay.
Okay, you want to get to that? I mean,
that's just so stupid. We don't need to spend a whole segment on it. But
no, but I mean, Tom Terrific was one thing when then he backtracked from that when that was Tom Seaver's nickname. People gave him a whole lot of a heat for it when he was with New England, and he was, oh, that wasn't my idea. I just didn't want to offend Tom Seaver, and I never had any – that was someone else doing it for me. So we're done with that. But now because he's a member of the Buccaneers, that his agent, of course, deflecting again, has asked for the process of getting the legal rights to use the terms Tampa Bay or Tampa Brady.
As if they're like, I was over my hate for him because he left the Patriots, and now I hate him again. There's just like, somebody said it on Twitter, and it's a douchey move. Like, it's just, come on, dude, you don't need to. And what's crazy is I saw Darren Revelle, I think, was the one that tweeted it or posted about it. But at one point, Dan Patrick was selling shirts that said Tampa Bay on them, with the number 12 on it, and had the Dan Patrick logo on the back.
Yeah.
And now that he's copyrighted it, they're not going to be able to sell those anymore. So he got greedy and went and took it. It's just, it's corny, it's douchey, and it's It's stupid. I just kind of wish he would have went to the Las Vegas Raiders. Huh? Okay.
Oh, boy. And here's my thing.
No.
If you're a Buccaneers fan or you somehow are a Brady fan enough to follow him wherever he goes, the only thing you really want that was a really good one was the old school Buccaneers logo they're not going back to. And instead of the Buccaneer guy's face with the knife in his teeth, it was Brady's face with the knife in his teeth and the as part of the logo. That's a funny, very cool, very clever shirt. I don't want Tampa Bay or Tampa Brady.
The Baltimore Ravens, huh? Who's doing it? This guy. The Houston Texans? What? Huh?
Call Westling. You got this more ideas for your marketing company. This marketing company is taking shape more and more by the day.
This guy's doing it big over here. Yeah.
A friend of mine used to get paid a lot of money with a company called BrandThink, where they would go to different sports teams and come up with marketing slogans for the year and or more for the franchise. You just need to pick up where he left off. You just go city to city and don't even limit it to just sports teams. Just take all comers. Whoever wants to rebrand their business, just give it, put it right in your lap.
Washington Redskins? What?
Oh, my God.
Huh? I'm just going to do this. I'm just doing this the whole time.
Please don't Green Brady Packers, okay? I don't want anything to do with that man.
So. Why are you stealing my shine now? That was the next one.
If I could take a more feeble dad joke approach to any of your shine.
Well, obviously, if you're going to do what Tampa I did. Brady, then it's got to be Green Brady Packers. Duh.
And it
Green
sounds
Brady.
You had some cleverness in some of the ones you had recently, and I'm not going to unlike you, I'm not going to kibosh the ones you even had today. So let me have one that I was against.
Okay. I still think the Houston Texans would have been good. Bill O'Brien would have traded Deshaun Watson and 11 first-round picks for Brady, and then we could have been the Houston Texans.
Okie dokie.
I'll be over here if you need me.
Yeah, good luck with that. All right, so we've got plenty more to get to on this FEF Friday version of your usual suspects as we continue to roll. Well, I'll tell you what. Aside from the Texans news and the XFL news that is so disheartening, even with the potential for the NBA starting up again and or even Major League Baseball, now there's a poll out there that suggests that 72% of fans will not return to support their favorite teams in person unless there is a vaccine for the coronavirus.
That's smart.
Barry, we'll get your thoughts on that and everybody else's as we continue to roll through hour number two. So we can kick that around a little bit. But I was a little surprised by that. A lot more to come. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Good morning. Now back away from my car, please. I'm not required to act like I like you until the bell ring. I'm sick of everything that got anything to do with this school. I ought to just sit right here and call a sub and leave.
If you happy and you know it, shut your mouth. Boy, shut up before you talk to me. Or you gonna ever do your work? You're doing everything but your work. You take your watch off, because apparently you got too much time on your hands already. Don't make me change on you. I've been nice, but you can call me acrobat, because I'm about to flip the switch on all y'all.
Hey, there you go. That's Eddie B. He's our comedian of the week on an FYI Friday. Barry gave you the backstory in hour number one. Kind of a Cinderella story in a lot of ways, but
very much so.
Funny dude. And we've got another clip coming up from him at 3:15, so stay tuned for that. Barry, I teased this before we went on the air. A little bit, I don't know, I guess shockingly, we might take different sides of this one, but according to Reuters, and a poll that they took recently, people in the United States to the tune of 72% said they would not feel safe attending any sporting event until a vaccine for the coronavirus is developed. Asked what they would do if the league resumed play before a vaccine, 12% said in the poll released they would attend, but only if social distancing could be maintained. Only 13% said they would feel safe.
I'm just watch from home. I mean, what's the big deal, right?
I think if you have issues, watch from home. I was surprised that the number was that high because you see so much passion behind all of these different, whatever the fan base is, in just wanting the games to return. And a lot of them who, you know, are out there on social media and otherwise saying, if they're playing, I'm going or I want to go. But then on the flip side, you've got Ohio State's athletic director and others saying when Adam Schefter came out yesterday and said of all the people he's been talking to within college athletics, everybody fully intends and believes that there is going to be a college football season, and then he got hammered from U.S. senators and otherwise saying that stay in your lane, you know, basically don't say these things, questioning his sources. And he's like, look, I didn't mean to offend anybody. I'm not trying to be political, but I'm just – trying to let people know because there's so many people that want to go see sports and watch sports. So the AD from Ohio State said, if you're worried about fans in the stands and their health, then why shouldn't you also be worried about the athletes too? If fans can't be in the stands, then athletes shouldn't be on the field.
Well, but I think the point was once everybody's cleared to return, once things kind of get back to normal without a vaccine, most people still wouldn't go. But, I mean, people will still play because they could be tested and, you know, all those things. But I understand the point because when you look at it, I just saw a headline right before we went on air, and I put it in the rundown, but it's not something we need to go into detail on. But right now, coronavirus is now the leading cause of death in the United States. It has surpassed cancer. It has surpassed heart disease. As on a day-to-day basis now, coronavirus is killing more people than anything else daily. And so that's when you start hearing stuff like that, it gets people's attention. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of fear around this. And you know, I understand why people are like, man, I'm not going to risk that for a sporting event. Until you know that there's a vaccine and you know, because there's not going to be a cure, but until you know there's a vaccine, I get it, man.
But here's the other thing, though, Barry.
It's a dangerous thing.
I get when we're talking about professional sports because they're paid a lot of money. The NBA just said that they're going to pay their April 15th checks in full to all of their players, and it is a ridiculous amount of cash that's going to go out. So you know it's a money-making business, and for the players participating, they want that money. And so they're going to go out and they want to continue to play. When you talk about college athletes, and in particular college sports too, they're not getting paid. Yes, they're getting a scholarship, but you would be getting a scholarship and an education based on normal circumstances. These aren't normal circumstances. So the fact that they have so much more, I feel, to lose than to gain, as much as I want to see college football back, as much as I want to see all sports back, I would sympathize more towards if players don't want to play or the NCAA, which we can't expect them ever to make the right decision, but allowing those kind of decisions to be made bordering on the safety of everyone, fans, players, etc. Because these kids going out there have so much more to lose, regardless of how fast the testing is. If you got it, you got it.
Well, I think college and pro is two different things for completely. I'm with you. If there is any risk of danger, then I think you have to really evaluate, is it worth it to play college sports at this point? I know it's worth it to the universities because it's a cash cow.
Right.
But is it worth risking the lives of the young men and women that play those, you know, college sports?
Well, and that's my thing. It's worth it to the universities, but is it worth it to the student-athlete playing for universities?
I mean, I can't answer that because some of them may have to, you know, that may be, look, this is all I got. I'm not going to be a professional anything other than athlete. So if I don't play, then I can't get drafted in my sport of choice. So it might be worth it that they play because it could mean their livelihood in the future. When it comes to, you mentioned something that made me, and this is a little off topic, but we can get back to it. But you said that the NBA is going to pay out their April 15 checks, and that's a lot of money. Are you good with that?
What do you mean? Am I good with that? I mean, I think that from the standpoint of from an NBA perspective, even if you're Tillman Fertitta or any owner, you got more than three quarters of the regular season played. So I'm not really concerned with
you. And they got paid for those three quarters of the regular season, correct? Well,
yeah, yes, they got paid, right? But if the plan is still going forward, at some point, some way, their plan is, and every indication is, they're going to finish the regular season, and then they're going to have their playoffs. As long as they are still, they haven't canceled that idea, they've postponed it. So as long as they're on track to say that they're going to stand behind that, then I'm okay paying them for the rest of the regular season.
Well, here's how I look at it. One, it's a business. And you just wonder if they're like, well, we don't want to anger the players. Well, you know, the players, everybody else in this country is making a sacrifice, but these millionaires are still getting paid and they're not doing their job. So I find it to be, from a business perspective, it's almost a dumb move. You're paying people to not work, and you'd have zero revenue or very little revenue, I should say, because you might be getting some, you know, residuals from sales or the NBA network or whatever. I don't know. But the revenue isn't the same. It's probably, at the very least, you're breaking even, but you're probably losing money. But then what do you do if they come back and you delay the season? If you pay them for the – if this goes through, you know, the end of the season and beyond, but you've paid them for the end of the season, they're going to be expected now to go out and play for free because they've already been paid. And you think the players are going to be like, whoa, hey.
Well, there's a lot into it. I mean, like, for instance, the TV deal, they have to play a minimum of 70 games. So I think that's just another safeguard to say that they're going to at some point finish the regular season. But I think a lot of players are so, especially, you know, LeBron-type players, but also other players chasing a championship, knowing they're going to be a playoff team. For a lot of reasons, they want to come back, whether it be selfishly, individually, or team goal-oriented reasons. The players all want to come back because they played so much of the season. Like LeBron said, he would have a real empty feeling because of the unfinished business if this season doesn't get completed.
But it's not about coming back. It's about getting paid to not play. That's what's
happening. Sure, but as opposed to baseball, where I would agree with you totally, they haven't done anything this whole year. They haven't played a single regular season game, so they shouldn't get paid. I'm fine with that.
But the players, if they played three quarters of a season, they were getting paid for three quarters of a season. They were paid up to the point where games stopped. But now,
right, but I'm saying that coupled with the fact that
for what?
It looks like, but it looked coupled with the fact that the league and everybody talking about it says they still fully intend to finish this year out. So bail them out in case any of these, you know, players on the bottom end of the scale are having trouble making ends meet during this time off. You continue to pay them with kind of like a goodwill gesture because you know at some point they're going to finish the season. And if you don't, they're still making enough money as a league that you can take care of that.
It's a bad business decision.
Okay, Cal McNair.
What?
We agree to disagree. I mean, it's all. I'm trying to think more than just about the business decision. I'm thinking about, you know, you want to take care of your players who have put it on the line for you for more than almost the whole season
and got paid to do it.
All right, we agree to disagree. Let us know what you think if you want to join the conversation. 713-780-3776. You can chime in on that or any other topics you might have on your mind you want to get off your chest. You can also hit us up on Twitter as The Usual Suspects rolls on ESPN 97.5.
G'day, Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Here comes the second half of the show on an FBI Friday. It is The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Aaron Raybould in for Dell, who was in for Nick. Barry and myself, as we get you ready for your weekend and turn it over to the Blitz at 4, as we've had some good discussions about a lot of different topics today, with plenty more fodder and ammunition given to us to one Bill O'Brien and the boys on. And, of course, the disappointing news of the XFL looking like it's no longer going to be in existence. So As we kick off the second half of the show, I would love to find a bunch of positives, Barry, to bring to the table. But maybe you have something that I haven't seen.
Well, I did think Cody's point was a pretty good one on Twitter. Cody Rogers tweeted us. He said, you know, I don't usually get into the business of other people, but I find it pretty goofy to pay the players but not pay the stadium staffs. Well, now you do have to remember some of the stadium staffs.
Yep.
The stadiums are not owned by the teams. But you do have front office players or front office folks, and they're getting paid. But you said you were that you know people that are concerned that that may not be for very long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you don't all have an organization in which your best player decides to come to the rescue and donate from $500,000 to whatever, $1 million or more to try and help those people. You want the owner who those people work for to have the same kind of understanding for the employees as they do the players. I get that.
Yeah, I'm with you. If you own the stadium, then yeah, they should be paying their stadium employees. If you're going to pay the players, you should pay everybody in your organization top to bottom. Otherwise, it's just a really bad look.
Yeah, and I think simply because these people were dedicated to you as, on both sides of the equation, players and employees. They made the commitment to you. They didn't do anything to warrant being, for lack of a better term, let go, because it wasn't for lack of their performance. It was for this unforeseen pandemic that, for what everybody has seen and said about it, is not going to be forever, and we will be back, you know, back to normal at some point. But you know, their lives are turned upside down, and in the case of the employees, none of them are in the financial situation as the players. Even the last guy on an NBA roster is making more than maybe in the entirety of someone's career they would hope to make in the jobs that they're in working in the stadiums. So
the average NBA player makes $7.7 million. The average NBA player makes $7.7 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the league minimum or what the lowest paid player in the NBA makes, or who that would be, but
NBA minimum. If you Google what the NBA minimum is,
510. This says it's 510,000.
Yeah, and then when you talk about guys with more service in the league, it's a number that's even going to go up from there. So I was thinking about, you know, career earnings, even for a guy that only plays a couple years in the league, they're millionaires. So, you know, if you're telling me that someone taking tickets or someone working security in one of the sections in the building hopes to make that doing that job, I mean, it's going to take, you know, way more years than they're probably willing to put into it.
Yeah. And then Amos on Twitter said, a lot of these NBA players are taking care of more than just themselves. They probably really need those checks. Bro, I hope that was sarcasm.
I hope you really want me to feel sorry. Are you talking about James Harden taking care of strippers?
I mean, I don't know how you would want me to feel sorry for dudes that are averaging $7.7 million a year.
Let alone, Barry, in the case of Harden.
I'm sorry.
We know what he makes from the Rockets, and then you factor in what he's making from Adidas, and then you factor in what he's making from the Gummy Bear Company and all the other endorsements that he has. And you don't think that you want us to feel sorry for someone that basically it's a drop in the bucket to say that he's going to donate what Joel Embiid did, which I think was $500,000, to other players like Zion and otherwise that I think have donated at least $1 million. But, you know, that's harder for Zion, a 19-year-old kid who's just starting to get endorsements and is still working on a rookie contract. But for a guy like Harden that's making more from his shoe deal than he is from the Rockets, stop it. Come on.
NBA minimum salary for 2019-2020, this is according to HoopsRumors.com. So 2019-2020, with 0 years of experience, your minimum salary is $898,310. So, I mean, round up and it's $900,000. That's what you make with no experience in the NBA.
Did y'all talk about the CJ McCollum statement a couple days ago?
What did he say?
Hold on, let me pull the audio for you.
Yeah, but if you're making a – go ahead, sorry.
I would say there's some guys in the league that are hurting right now because there could be a work – obviously the work stoppage is in place, but there could be a pay stoppage. We're on pace to lose about, 23.5% of income. Off this season, and then we probably lost $1 billion, maybe even more, depending on if we're able to restart a season, which will affect collective bargaining agreement in the BRI next season. So I think a lot of guys are going to be hurting, especially people on minimums or people that didn't just budget correctly. They didn't expect this to happen. Maybe they loaned money or gave money to family. Maybe they're taking care of multiple people. And now there's a work stoppage for us and for a lot of people in America. So I would say out of 450 players, 150 probably living paycheck to paycheck.
So there you
paycheck
have it. For
to
people
paycheck
that don't
on
think...
$1 million?
Come but here's on, my bro. Thing, Barry, okay, because I understand where you're coming from, but having worked in the league, you know that there are a lot of players that put life on hold and go into debt because they want to chase this dream. So they're playing overseas for peanuts. And they're like CJ said, they have multiple relatives that they're trying to take care of that they have now become the income source and revenue generator for an entire family, whether they like it or not. And so they've dug their hole in debt before they gotten their one big break to actually make a roster. So I understand that, like, just on the surface, it sounds far-fetched to say that an NBA player is living paycheck to paycheck. But until you know everybody's personal circumstances, you can't really judge them on that, because there are guys that have been dealt circumstances they didn't ask for or that they chose to in chasing their dream that have put them in a lot of debt.
There, yeah, no, let me put this in perspective from my standpoint. You're right. There are guys that are taking care of other people, and those guys at minimum make $1 million a year. There are also people that are probably taking care of those families, same amount of family members that make $35,000 a year that don't have a job anymore and are having to rely on workers' comp, or not workers' comp, but unemployment checks that pay you pennies on the dollar of what you used to make. They didn't have a chance to sock away any of the percentage of the million that they would make year in and year out. I'm sorry, Joel and Amos. I'm not going to feel sorry for a dude whose salary is $1 million a year because he has to take care of some family members. I'm just not going to do it. That just doesn't make sense to me. When there are families out here that won't make $1 million in 10 years that are in the same situation and they're not getting paid.
I'm not asking you to feel sorry for anyone. I'm just saying, when we're discussing the topic, that not everybody is making what James Harden is making. So therefore, true. It's hard to lump them all into one basket and say, yeah, they shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't be getting their money, and I'm not going to pay, you know, the max players or something like that. Because I'm even on board with you in saying what I think you're saying too, which is, you know, what I haven't seen enough of, which is not only do those max players, as we've seen some of them come to the forefront to try and take care of those arena workers and otherwise, I think the other thing is that the first person that should be checking on the rest of his roster are the max players, mm-hmm. to say, hey, are you okay right now? Can mm-hmm. I help you out? Because I'm doing great, obviously, and you're my teammate, and I care about you. And so they could be doing that too. But, yep. I mean, it's just, you know, unfortunately, it's the situation that we're in. We're going to see a lot of different leagues and players and teams handle things differently.
Well, and if you listen to what CJ McCollum said, he goes, oh, some of these guys didn't anticipate this, so they weren't really – basically, I think what he was saying is they were just spending their money however they wanted to because they thought it was always going to be there. That's their fault. I mean, you know as well as I do, Joel.
Yes, absolutely.
You know as well as I do, the first thing that they do when these cats get into a league, whether it's the NFL, the NBA, baseball, or whatever, is they sit them down with a money manager and they tell them, you should be saving this much, you should be investing this, you should be doing, this is how you need to handle your business to make sure you always have money.
Yep.
And these cats don't do that. They go out and they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on frivolous stuff, and now we're supposed to feel sorry for a dude whose base salary is $1 million a year because he went out and bought, you know, $20,000 worth of clothes or something. I'm not gonna.
Well,
I'm,
yeah,
I'm
and
sorry.
There's a rookie.
I don't begrudge
right.
them. It's their money, but don't look for my sympathy, Amos. That's not gonna happen.
Yeah, that's, you know, the whole theories of you don't need to keep up with the Joneses and don't count your chickens before they're hatched, because you're right. The rookie symposiums are there, and aside from what an agent who should be setting up his players to have someone advise them, they have rookie symposiums for the entire rookie class where they have to – it's mandatory, and they get told all of this stuff. So, yeah, in a lot of ways, they're probably they only have themselves to blame. I do feel bad for the players at the end of the bottom of the totem pole that's trying to take care of a bunch of people out of the goodness of their heart and didn't see this coming. But for whatever the reason, that's what we're in right now in terms of a situation with the pandemic in the NBA. If you guys want to join the conversation like Amos did, or you want to get in another way, hit us up on Twitter or 713-780-3776. That's our HRNP listener line. Call that number, text that number, or again, like I said, hit us on Twitter. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. I take another chance, take a fall,
take a shot for you. Well, hello! To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
I'm the king of rock, there is none higher. Fire MCs should call me sire. To build my kingdom, you must choose fire. I won't stop rocking till I retire.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, Nick, not on the schedule today, being safe, staying home. Aaron Raybould finishing up what Dell started for us. It's Barry and myself on an F Yeah Friday in the big city as we wrap up hour number two of the three-hour show. Lots of good discussions today. And, of course, one of the main topics that has been leading the charge of people and comments, as well as our own, is that of Bill O'Brien making another move overnight. In case you missed it, he traded with the Rams. He gave up the second-round pick that they had this year in the draft for wide receiver Brandon Cooks, and a lot of people have had a lot to say. Of those people, Barry, we played some of the comments, including Booger McFarland and others, but here's someone that's been in the front office of a team, someone that's played, someone that I consider a very knowledgeable football guy in Lewis Riddick. He had a lot to say, and he also brings up a point we haven't brought up yet about the trade that was made with Stephon Diggs and the Buffalo Bills. But let's start with Lewis Riddick on the history of Bill O'Brien and bad deals.
Starting with the timing that was a little bit botched as far as, you know, Jadeveon Clowney and his ouster, what he paid for Laremy Tunsil, and then not signing him to and not making it contingent upon signing a long-term contract. Now Laremy Tunsil absolutely has all the leverage on them in that regard. What he received in return for DeAndre Hopkins in comparison to what Stephon Diggs netted the Minnesota Vikings, people are comparing that. And then now, you know, when you're trading for Brandon Cooks and basically swapping out DeAndre Hopkins for Brandon Cooks, and Brandon Cooks has an injury history.
You take that, Barry, and then, like I said, he makes the even, because a lot of those points we covered. Mm-hmm. But here's the other factor in the Stephon Diggs Buffalo Bills trade that should really get more of the ire of Texans fans.
You know, when you think about what the Buffalo Bills gave up for Stephon Diggs, remember who is up there in a personnel capacity right now. It's Brian Gaine, who Bill O'Brien ousted down there in Texas. You start to wonder, was he not able to go ahead and have Buffalo be a player for DeAndre Hopkins because of the fact that maybe that relationship is strained? And you know how much I talk about managing relationships. So now it's going to call into question that relationship and how that maybe was mismanaged and led to Brian Gaine being ousted from there.
I told you at the time, if you remember, that I had sources that were very, very close to the situation that talked to Brian Gaine and how upset he was, how set up he was, how O'Brien completely screwed him over and he only wanted yes men. And if Brian Gaine wasn't going to be the guy that bowed down and did everything the way Bill O'Brien wanted to, that, you know, then that wasn't going to be a fit amongst other things. And then you think about that factor of these moves. Would it have been different with Brian Gaine, in your opinion?
What do you mean, would it have been different?
Everything to this point, from starting back to the one that really ended up, you know, costing Brian Gaine his job, which was the Clowney situation. But if Brian Gaine is still there and it's not a employment ending decision after Clowney, you got to believe that everything would be totally different. And I believe DeAndre Hopkins would still be a member of this team.
We don't know. You can't predict the move, but does he make all these asinine moves and overpaying and undervaluing his own players? I don't think so. But of course, we don't really know. We didn't get that big of a sample size with him, and he was kind of already under the thumb of Bill O'Brien, and making the moves that Bill wanted him to make. So I don't
but
know.
But, Barry, unlike Bill O'Brien.
I feel like a third grader would be a better GM at this point than Bill O'Brien. I really
well,
do. I think,
say, unlike Bill O'Brien, Brian Gain at least had personnel experience. He was involved in trades before. So he knew, even in the Miami trade, look, one of the precursors we have to do if we give up this much in terms of draft choices and our future, we have to make sure that Tunsil signed. We have to make sure we secure the guy that's going to be the centerpiece for us in what we get back. You know, those are the kind of things because of his experience that he brings to the table, as opposed to a guy that's had experience coaching his whole life, but's taken on this job. And I guess if you want to say that Jack Easterby somehow has some kind of experience and is an expert, I don't think so. But I don't think that any of this would have happened if Brian Gain is involved in terms of how you execute a deal.
I don't know. I mean, it's, I agree. I don't think it would be this bad, at least, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Brian Gain was going to do some dumb stuff that we were going to get mad at. I think that's every game.
It's possible, but don't you think it's like in the How to Be a General Manager textbook, Exhibit A is, if nothing else, before you pull the trigger on a deal, look at past precedents. Look at what top line wide receivers have brought back for teams in trades. Look at, you know, how you, if you're giving up significant draft assets, what you get in return, just so you don't get fleeced. And also you don't have to deal with the whole nation or your fan base knowing that you got fleeced multiple times.
Yeah. That's the bad thing is that it's like the Texans are a laughing stock right now because of it. And so do I guess it comes down to, do you think the Texans will be a laughing stock if Brian Gain was the GM? No, I don't.
I don't either. No matter what Bill O'Brien did as a coach, I don't think that they would be anywhere near the laughing stock nationwide that they are right now.
Because I think more people feel like Bill O'Brien is an above average coach than not. And even though he does dumb stuff on the field. Yeah, I do. I really do. I think more people feel like that than not. And I think that, does he do dumb stuff? Yeah. Does he get called out for it? Yeah. But at the end of the day, he wins more games than he loses. Barely. And he's, you know, he's had some success getting this team to the playoffs. He can't win in the playoffs, but that's a knock on a lot of people. I mean, again, we talked about that was a knock on Andy Reid until this last season. So I think the levels of respect people have for Bill O'Brien as a coach far exceed what they have for him as a GM. And it's just an unfortunate power play that's put the Texans in a position to be, you know, trending more towards the Browns and less towards the Patriots.
And I give you that people have higher regard for him as a coach than a general manager, but I think that people have higher regard to a cartoon character than they as a general manager than they do to Bill O'Brien. But Aaron Raybould, I ask you this because we asked Dell this when he was there in the first hour. Do you feel, from a coaching perspective, to Barry's point, do you feel that he's an above-average coach, and or do you feel that he's a good coach in the NFL?
I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's got his moments where he's above average in some aspects, but the constant mistakes, the no clock management, the not knowing when to just hand off responsibility to somebody else who could, you know, maybe an actual offensive coordinator who will help design plays and call his own plays and stuff. He's got very small flashes of, hey, he could actually be decent and slightly above average as a coach, but just the minor fundamental mistakes that any coach makes like that hold him back.
Okay.
So challenging stupid things without, you know, have one of your coaches, have one of your assistants sit up in the booth and have him be the challenge guru who goes, you know what, looks okay, go for it. If we lose it, we lose it.
But Barry, you tied it to record, right? I mean, you can't argue with the fact that from a record perspective, he made playoffs, what, 6 out of 8 years? He's won the division multiple times. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of what you're judged upon as a coach is success by winning and making the playoffs, and he's done that.
Yep. You can't argue. You can't knock the results. Like, it's a fact. The fact of the matter is, if you look at how many games he's won, it's more than he's lost. That makes him above average, period. At the end of the day, he's above average.
Well, if you look at it purely by the numbers and average is 50-50 or 500, then you're absolutely, then I can't argue that.
And, you know, again, if you evaluate what he did, I remember specifically saying on air, I'm surprised at how fun this offense was to watch over the last couple of weeks. That's credit to Bill O'Brien for opening it up. using Deshaun Watson more in a style that, that complements his play. And, you know, and he did something. I mean, lots of more, you know, we saw jet sweeps. We saw these different, getting the tight end involved in the red zone and actually scoring some touchdowns and not being so inept in the red zone like they have been in the past. And so, I mean, he should get credit for those things and trying those things. But again, I don't. There's a line that you draw from above average to good.
Okay.
He doesn't cross that line.
Because I was going to say, the other thing is, from Aaron's standpoint, instead of just strictly by the numbers and what average is or above average, then you have to go checks and balances. Do the positives outweigh the negatives? Because the positives are the things that you mentioned, the success as a team, the playoff appearances, things like that. But the negatives of not just the Chiefs game with the blown leads and the fake punts and the not going for it on fourth downs and didn't have the play, but, you know, not being organized by basically admitting you didn't have the plays, the press conferences, which pisses everybody off, the lack of clock management, timeout management, challenge flag management. Again, for what you said about the positives about the plays that he called during a stretch, it's outweighed by the fact that over the entirety of his career with the Texans, his play calling has been a ton of negatives because of his conservative play calling and the way he's put Deshaun in harm's way. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it. It's just, that's where I'm coming from. I get what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. I can't argue the fact that he has a better than average record.
I mean, let me read you his record year over year, and you just tell me. And he's got one losing season since 2014. But his records were 9-7, 9-7, 9-7, 4-12, 11-5, 10-6. He made the playoffs four times out of the 6 years he's been the head coach of the Houston Texans. Yeah, he's 2-4 in the playoffs, but his winning percentage is 54.2%. And if you're curious where that puts him, at least all time, he is directly behind Ron Rivera, who's won 54.6% of his games. And I think a lot of people would tell you that Ron Rivera is a pretty decent coach.
But Barry, okay, and I get that, and I'm not trying to have an argument here, but in the terms of the coming back to my side of it to say, but here's the thing, you could say all you said, and yes, he won those games, but a lot of times he had help, because what is not factored in just simply the numbers is the ineptness of who was on the other sideline and who was on the other team, whether it be a bad quarterback that gave you games when they were winning those nine games in a row by throwing a pick in the fourth quarter when it looked like they were going to win the game. Or Jason Garrett not going for it on fourth and less than a yard when you knew you had one of the best running backs in the game. So I get what you're saying about record, but a lot of times he was gifted those wins based on what other teams did as opposed to what he did to get them over the top and win.
But I think if you start making a list, every coach is going to get those gifts. Every coach is going to have those kind of games where it's like,
I don't
know, we got lucky.
I agree, but maybe not in that those numbers.
Put it this way. What do you think John Gruden's winning percentage is as a coach? What do you think is winning? Do you think it's higher or lower than Bill O'Brien's?
I mean, obviously I know where you're going with this, but I would say higher. Yes, no?
I'm here. What happened?
I said I would say higher, but I know where you're going with this. So are you going to tell me?
Hello?
Might be having issues with Barry.
We'll go to break. We'll get Barry back in a second. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
And Felina, goodbye.
Houston's only FM sports station is now bringing you more talk with less commercials.
I heard so much talk.
Making that commute to work even better, even if it's just from the kitchen to the living room.
So, yeah, there's a lot of advantages.
ESPN 97.5.